Recording.
Welcome to the Black Tower Podcast, a Wheel of Time podcast. I'm Thorn.
And I'm Greg.
And today we're going to talk about Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time.
Did I catch you off guard with the way I said I'm Greg? Because you kind of delayed there coming back in with the second part of that intro. I'm just curious.
I'm having trouble. I'm on two screens right now, and I'm having trouble telling whenever, because the screen on the left is right on my peripheral. And so I couldn't tell that we were recording. I said the word peripheral.
Peripheral?
Yeah, that one.
She's from Texas, everyone. She doesn't know.
I'm not from Texas. I'm from New York.
She's from New York, everyone. She doesn't know. They say things weird anyway. Who am I kidding? I'm from Alabama. Well, welcome back, everybody. I hope you're already having a fun time listening to us. Hopefully tonight we're going to wrap up our review on the Fires of Heaven. But before we do, we've got a bit of an announcement to make. Thorn, do you want to start in on it, or should I?
I think you should, because I'm nervous.
Okay. All right. Well, obviously, we have been greatly honored to be here on the Black Tower podcast. Andrew and Aaron, even though Aaron was kind of more from the support role, they have been great. We have had a fantastic time here recording these last several episodes, filling in for Andrew. But Thorn and I have been talking, and we have both decided that it's time for us to move on from the Black Tower podcast. Here in the next couple of weeks, hopefully Andrew will be returning. We have been talking to him, and he is anticipating coming back to the podcast. So I know you guys will be watching Twitter for those updates. But this particular episode will be the last episode that Thorn and I will record for the Black Tower podcast. And the reason being is because we have decided to start our own podcast. Now, I know I'm speaking for Thorn here, and Thorn, interject anytime, with anything else that you want said. But, Thorn and I have discussed this in great detail. We have sought advice about this, and, we are, at the end of the day, we're professionals. And we, like I said, we very much appreciate the opportunity here at the Black Tower, but we did not build the Black Tower. We just came in at its moment of need, and we assisted it and helped it to continue. And now that it no longer really needs us, we will be leaving. But we don't want to leave the podcast arena. So we feel it's time for the two of us, since we, enjoy doing this, it's time for the two of us to strike out on our own and begin our own podcast. And Thorn, what's our new podcast going to be called? Did we decide on a name?
We decided on a name. We are going to be called the One Power Podcast, since Greg and I are male and female. The One Power is made up of Sidon and Sidar. We're opposites, but we're also equals.
Well, and I think that also describes our personalities. I'm very loud and boisterous, and I don't shut up. And it takes a minute for Thorn to start talking. She's the introvert between the two of us. I'm married to one of those. That's probably how I have a good dynamic with Thorn, is because I am very used to being with introverts.
My husband's an extrovert too, so...
Sense. So what I'm hearing is when my wife and I finally meet Thorn and her husband, me and her husband are probably going to get really loud. It's kind of what I'm hearing.
Yeah, probably. Right.
And the two of you are going to go off in the corner going, what are they talking about? I don't even know. They're so loud. I know. Why do they be so loud? Like, literally, hey, my wife all the time in public is saying how loud I am. So
my husband loves wrestling, so y'all can talk about that.
Resisting the urge to go back and do some impressions. If you're part of the Patreon, you know what I'm talking about. but we just want to extend again our heartfelt thanks to Andrew and Aaron for putting us in this position. We have appreciated it. We have learned a lot. And we hope
it brought us together.
Right. And it did something that wouldn't have happened anyway, because Thorn and I were just kind of like, oh, hey, you're on the Discord. What's up? That was kind of our relationship before this. Now we've realized that we believe we have a certain dynamic that can carry on to another show, which we would have loved to stay on the Black Tower. But we just, you know, we got to talking about it. And like I said, we did not build the Black Tower. It would, if it was wrong for us to just stay on the Black Tower when we need to be our own thing. And I think anyone out there who has a podcast or even listens to podcasts, which if you're listening to podcasts, I'm assuming you're in the second category. you would understand that, you know, it's nothing against anyone or anything. It's just these things run their course. We came in temporarily and that time has come to an end. So, but as of the day this is uploaded, so that will be Friday. So if you're listening to this, you know, this is for Friday. By Friday, we will have our new Twitter up and running for our new podcast. So come check us out. Get some more details over there. We don't want to spend too much time talking about it here because this is the Black Tower podcast and it will remain the Black Tower podcast. And we are still going to have an episode in the capacity of the Black Tower podcast tonight, but this will be Thorne and Greg's final episode. We hope that Andrew may have us on as a guest later in the future. That may be a possibility, but as consistent hosts, this will be our final episode.
Yeah.
Well said, Thorne. Well said. Extrovert, introvert. See there?
There's so many lines on yours, and you see like little bumps every once in a while where I'm just like, uh-huh, yeah.
I'm wondering if you're going to cut that out or leave that in, and then people are going to be like, what are they talking about, bumps and lines? It's the recording, guys. We're watching the recording on Zencaster.
I'm going to leave. Actually, I think it would be fun on this episode just to leave everything in. I mean, unless we totally mess up or if I take a pee break.
Challenge accepted. Entering hard mode. So, speaking of that, we're going to begin the final part of our Fires of Heaven review, which is actually probably going to be over 3/4 of the book because we didn't get very far last week.
No, we didn't.
But from here on out, if you have not read up to the end of The Fires of Heaven, you're going to get spoiled. So please, 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 if you have not done that, stop listening right here. Because if you keep listening, we're about to ruin the entire book for you and probably everything up to that point. So make sure you've read up to the end of The Fires of Heaven before you listen to this episode. So with that being said, Thorne, where are we starting back in on this book tonight?
Okay, so last week we talked about Rand and the Aiel chasing, starting to kind of chase Culloden, and Avienda giving Rand Lehman's sword, and so we talked a little bit about the White Tower, Ruidian, just basics, or just basically the first few chapters, really.
Mm-hmm. But we're about to turn it up to 11 and really get through this. So
yeah,
it looks like the next thing lined up here. So the first about quarter of the book, the biggest thing that happens is what becomes known as the Second Battle of Cairhien, because I'm thinking they call it the Second Battle of Cairhien because the first one was in the Aiel War.
Yes, I think that's correct.
See, I didn't even know it was even called anything. All I knew was that, you know, they chase the Shido to Cairhien, they get to Cairhien, the Shido are like burning and pillaging Cairhien, and then Rand shows up and with the rest of the Aiel.
They were also taking Wetlanders as Gaishine.
Right, we mentioned that last week, but yes, they were doing that too.
I can't remember.
It's good for a reminder. it's good for a reminder. But yes, they were going throughout, basically from the time they entered the quote-unquote wetlands all the way into Cairhien. They were taking Wetlanders, non-Aiel, as Gaishine, which was unheard of and actually forbidden because they don't follow Jaito.
Yes. So
they basically are breaking all the rules. For the most part.
Actually, being Gaishine is pretty much a consensual thing with the Aiel, usually. They can't force somebody to be Gaishine if they don't want to be.
It's almost like the Wheel of Time equivalent of an indentured servant, where yes, it's not slavery because no one forced you into it against your will, and you're just like a prisoner that's forced to do things. It's more of, hey, I will willingly do this if you do this for me, or don't do this to me, or you know, a lot of people did to work off debt, which is actually kind of what's going on with the IEO, is they're, you know, they want to regain their honor. So they say, I will willingly serve you so I don't lose honor, so I don't lose G.
But the Shido are taking slaves. Yes, that's what they're doing straight up.
They call it Geistein, but they're really just Wetlander slaves. That's all it is, which is against Aiel sentiment and custom across the
board. Yeah, it's way against Jito.
So that's kind of what's been happening. So they all catch up to one another in Kyrian, and battle breaks out. And it's a pretty... I guess on the ranking scale, it didn't get very high up, but when I was reading it, it was a pretty good battle with a couple of notable exceptions.
I think that this is one of the, because we're still towards the beginning, there's not a lot of use of the one power as a weapon, except for Rand, Egwene, and Aviendar are fighting with the one power. Right. But other than that, there isn't much one power fighting. Or even one-on-one fighting. It's kind of seen as a whole, except for through Matrim's eyes.
Mm-hmm. Because,
and I don't know why I use his full name.
I was about to say, it's like, when do you call him Matrim? I mean, that's fine. That's his name, but, you know, okay. But the the thing about it is, though, and Thorne had actually mentioned this in our pre-show conversation, you know, she said, man, Culloden, you know, Culloden gets a raw deal here because Culloden gets got, but he doesn't get got by Rand. He gets got by Matt, number one. He didn't even.
And then,
number two, dude doesn't even get his own death scene. Like, Jordan was just like, I hate this guy. He's not even going to get, like, his own, like, highlighted death. Matt's just going to walk up and be like, yo, I killed that dude. What's up?
Yeah, we just find out later whenever all the Aiel are like, yeah, that guy's cool. He killed Culloden all by himself. And he's like, it wasn't that big of a deal. He's like, I just ended up across the battlefield from him and it was him or me. Matt doesn't even think of it as a big deal. He just thinks of Culloden as just another combatant on the field, not even as the leader.
Right. And that's interesting to me because, you know, so many times in fiction, whether it be TV shows, books, or whatever, it's this big thing of, you know, that guy's leading this army, this guy's leading that army, they both meet on the battlefield, big scene, close up, super big fight, and then one dies or whatever. For Matt, it was just like, dude, I didn't even think about it. I just walked up to him, fought him, and killed him. It's war. What's up? And Rand's like, you killed Culloden. He's like, yeah, did I stutter? Yeah, I killed Culloden, dude. Like, what's up? Like, that's his blood on the end of my spear. Don't at me. I mean, that's essentially how the conversation went.
You know, Matt totally would say, don't at me.
Oh, God, that's something. There's a novel idea. The Wheel of Time characters actually existing in this world as, like, us. Not like on Twitter where it's like, you know, what is this strange thing called Twitter and all this other stuff. Like, actually, like, being proficient in the ways of this world, but like our current time, but actually using the lingo and knowing the technology. Oh, that's actually a super scary thought. Can you imagine Matt on Twitter? No, guys, imagine Matt Coffin on Snapchat.
It would just be shitposting central.
No, you know what it'd be? It would be that on Twitter, but on Snapchat, it would be him bar hopping every weekend, different girl in his lap every night, like, because that's Matt dicing. Like, people's like, what's dicing? Yes. Casinos. Oh man, casinos. Matt would never leave. I live an hour away from Biloxi, and I know Matt would love it there.
I have no idea what Biloxi is. Oh, I've also never gambled.
I've done it before. It's not that big a deal. However, that's Matt's stick. But Biloxi is a city in Mississippi that has casinos. And I live in South Alabama. So if anybody wants to really go gamble, they have to drive to Biloxi. But it's like, you know, there's several there. So that's what I'm saying. If Matt was over here, he would probably stay over there. He wanted to live over there. Because it's actually a pretty town. But in any case, Matt pretty much just destroys Culloden. We don't even get to see how he does it. You know,
I kind of hope that they do it the same way in the TV show. I hope that Culloden just gets killed off screen and later everybody's just talking about how Matt annihilated Culloden.
Yeah, I hope that the actor that get to play Culloden is under no delusions that he's going to have an epic death scene, because he didn't get it in the books. He didn't even get a scene in the books. He didn't get mentioned in the books until, oh, Culloden's out there. Next thing you know, oh, Culloden's dead. What? But I'll be honest with you, I don't feel bad about that guy. Like, I was sick of that guy by this point in the series. Like, and he had just been in for, you know, all of most of last book and a little bit of, you know, Fires of Heaven, and I was sick of him. I didn't like Culloden. Like, I just, he was annoying to me. He was a very annoying villain. Well, and the thing is, like, he wasn't even really much of a, I don't guess you could really call him a villain in terms of Wheel of Time, other than that he opposed Rand's agenda. But even still, an antagonist would probably be better.
Yeah, at best.
But that was just
he was like a buzzing fly. Oh
God, yes. Well, they didn't even he's the annoying kid, and oh man, I just made a...
Have you seen the Culloden profile on Twitter?
Yes. Yes.
And he's got that guy that's like screaming. Yes. It's hilarious. It is
perfect. Oh, he's perfection.
It is absolute perfection.
Instead of calling it Jet Ito, he calls it Chet Ito, and it spells Cheeto.
Yes.
Oh man, my Rand account and his account have gotten into it before, and even like the Morden account and a couple of the Forsaken and like the Luce Theron's accounts were all like, we were all on the same side, like, dude, you suck. Like, he's down there close to, not with, but close to Gawain Trakand in terms of unlikability.
I think that I don't hate him so much because he dies very quickly.
And off screen. Ish.
And off screen. And once he dies, you don't have to really think about him anymore.
You really don't.
If
like you really don't. You're like, Culloden? Who is, oh, that guy. That guy. He was annoying. No, I don't miss him. Carry on.
Yeah.
But what's interesting to me, though, about Culloden is, you know, he's almost like, Thorne, are you familiar with The Office?
No. Okay,
so for listeners who are familiar with The Office, he is like the Dwight Schrute of the IEL. Like,
oh, that's the annoying guy who's glasses. Always being like pranked.
Yeah, by Jim. Mm-hmm. And that's who Culloden is, because nobody takes him seriously, and he has to like fake being the Karakarn in order to be taken seriously. They didn't want him as chief. They didn't want him as anything. And then when everything happened, the only reason anyone followed Culloden is because they just didn't want to follow a Wetlander and Randall Thor. That was literally, it was like the last election. You voted for one person because you hated the other person just a little bit more. Like, that's literally why they followed him.
I did not vote because I was like, well, it's going to be a shit show either way.
And that's enough on politics. So it was just an example. I'm not trying to get into all that. But anyway. Okay,
so let's get back to Wheel of Time politics. So at this point, it comes to Matt's attention that Queen Morgaes Trakan had been killed at the hands of the Forsaken Ravine.
Right.
Matt tells Rand, of course, and Rand's like, I'm going to kill this asshole.
Well, and of course, it's dramatic irony because as everyone from the beginning of the book and last week's episode knows that Morgaes actually fled Andor, but it is believed that she is dead because that's what Ravine, a.k.a. Lord Gabriel, a.k.a. Lord Gerbil, is telling everyone, is that she's passed or whatever. But basically, that's what gets back to them. So it's a bit ironic.
This battle has kind of an intense scene. Because lightning comes, so Rand goes to invade. Oh no, wait, that happens later. Because as he's getting ready to invade Camelin with an Aiel strike force, he is attacked by Lanfear, who is absolutely livid because Rand and Avienda banged.
Yeah, and we totally didn't even talk about that. And I'm trying to remember, did that happen toward the end of Shadow Rising, or did that happen in this book? I can't remember.
I believe it happened in this book. Let me see.
Because our notes don't even mention it. The whole fact that he opens a opens a gateway.
Yeah, what happened was... Yeah, they had... Okay, so Culloden already had Kyrian under siege, and Rand accidentally catches Avienda naked after taking a bath, and she runs away and somehow discovers traveling, although she doesn't know what she did, and Rand...
I was agreeing with you. Yeah, I was remembering.
Okay, yeah. And so Rand chases her and holds her gateway open, or tries to hold her gateway open using the one power. And he catches up to her and finds her totally unconscious because it's ice freaking cold. She's bare ass naked and she's used to the heat of the Aiel Waste. And so he takes off his clothes and basically... This is very smart of him, because whenever you are in a situation like this in the ice cold, you should remove your clothing and get close to the other person, because it's the best way to share body heat in the situation. So that's probably the only reason that they both stayed alive. And when she wakes up, she admits that she's in love with Rand. She's embarrassed by it, of course, because she feels like he belongs to Elaine, but they end up consummating their relationship.
Insert sexy music here.
Yeah, and whenever they wake up in the morning, they come across a Shan-Chan patrol, and they shield and bind the Shan-Chan, and they run back through, but somebody throws a spear, and this is where Rand gets his, what becomes later known as the Dragon Scepter, which is a length of Shan-Chan's spear that was thrown through the gateway and got cut in half.
So having said all that, we're in Kyrian.
So.
And Rand has,
and
I think he's taken the city at this point, hasn't he? When Lanvir shows up?
Yes, he has already taken... He has already taken the city, and because Avienda and Rand banging happened before they took Kyrian. So they're going down to the docks at Camelin, and Lanfear comes showing up, blaze of rage and fire, saying, "Who's Avienda?" And is trying to kill Rand.
And the thing was, she was in a wagon with
yes,
I forget his name, but he was in the waste with them. And he was a dark friend.
She was the peddler. She was with Asmodian and I forgot the dark friend's name. He wasn't that important.
Either way, she skins the dude. And then she...
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Do you remember the comic that goes around where she's standing there holding the dude's body and she's like, "Which one of you is Avienda?" That's going around, that goes around the internet a lot of times. That's because she basically skinned him or turned him inside out or something, and then she blows the wagon up and she's standing there holding his body and then lets it drop and she's like, "Which one of you is Avienda?" And I just remember when I read that, I was like, "Oh God. Oh no. Obsessed crazy lady is being obsessed and crazy. Oh God."
And part of she tries to attack Avienda and Egwene. I don't think she knew which was which. And Rand saves them, but he tells her that he'll never love her. And then she's crazy lady mode and decides to try to kill him. And, of course, Rand being Rand, he can't bring himself to kill Lanvir because she's a woman. And Rand's got this over-chivalrous nonsense about him. I love Rand to death.
It really is. It's nonsense.
But freaking Lanvir skinned a man alive. Like
I get like the normal situation, quote-unquote, whereby he would not do that to a woman. But she's a freaking Forsaken. Dude, get her out of the way.
She doesn't really count as a human at this point, in my opinion. So to save Rand, Moraine tackles Lanfear, and they fall through the redstone doorway that Matt had previously gone through to the realm of the Eelfin. And what happens is, because they were both holding the power when they went through the doorway, it destroyed the Turon rail,
killing them both.
Presumably killing them both, because her bond with Lan is severed. Mm-hmm. And so the only thing that we can know at this point is at least Moraine is dead, because Lan no longer has her bond. Right. And he is now compelled to go east towards... I think it already tells earlier that he is going to Morel Sedai, a... Green sister.
I don't know who told that until the Moraine next had previously. One. But either way,
I think it's mentioned beforehand. She kind of threatens him with it. Like, she's like, I could give the bond to Morel now, and whenever he's acting a little bit.
That's right. But in any case, he feels that pull because his bond has been passed. And this is something that is not normally done, because normally if a warder or an Aes Sedai dies bonded, you know, then it leaves the other one, and it's just enormous despair. And, you know, they...
Sometimes this is done, but... Well, the way to stop a warder from basically killing himself, like doing something crazy and killing himself, basically, throwing himself, like, at the Blight or something, and just... suiciding himself to death. The only way to do it is to pass the bond, because then he's compelled to do whatever she says instead. So it's supposed to soften the blow of her death a little bit and to keep him alive. That's all that Moraine cared about, was making sure that he didn't waste his life.
It's pretty... All of it's pretty moving and abrupt, you know, because here's Moraine, who has been here since the first book and is one of those characters that you think is just going to be in every book and, you know, going to see the dragon reborn through to his destiny in the end, which was her, you know, her purpose, her cause as a blue Aes Sedai, you know, a blue Aja, you know, Aes Sedai from the Blue Aja. God, I'm getting all my words mixed up right there. And, and then there she is. She did that because of the cause. She did it because she saw Lanfear, because she knew that Rand was not going to kill Lanfear, that he was not going to stand up and do what he needed to do to stop his own life from being taken, because she was about to kill him.
And she honestly, Moraine believes in Rand at this point and believes in him as the Dragon Reborn. So she was giving up her life to make sure that he survives. So
ultimately, she literally dies for her cause. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Moraine is blue. I mean,
it's fitting. It's fitting. You hate it, especially, you know, 5 books into a 14, if you count New Spring, 15 book series, which, you know, me reading the books, because they were all published, which I just read this past year, you know, that was my reaction, was, oh my God, Moraine's dead. And it's only book 5. You mean I got to go to the rest of the series without Moraine? Like, God, like, does this suck? Like, who? Like, what's going to happen now?
Her death is pretty depressing.
It's sudden. It's very sudden. And it's not tragic in the way where she's like, you know, like decapitated or dies in battle or has a speech or something like that and then is killed or anything.
Well, she kind of died in battle. Well, it was kind of a pathetic battle, because she basically just tackled Lanfear. Like, she didn't, there was no epic battle. She tackled Lanfear into the doorway and she knew what was going to happen, because she had gone through the Turong Riel and Ruidian.
But I guess the thing I was, and I guess the point I was making, though, was that it was out of left field. You know, it's, you know, Lanfear's about to bear down on Rand, and then you see this blue blur, and she tackles her, and they're through the gateway. Gateway explodes. It all happens in like 5 seconds. And everyone's like, it just shell shocked everyone, because everyone kind of like, quick. everyone kind of looks and is like, wait a minute. Was that Moraine? That was Moraine. Oh my God, that's Moraine. And then like Lan feels his bond severed. And then everyone's like, oh no, she's really gone. How is she gone? Like, and Rand actually has to deal with that the rest of this book. And he's kind of haunted by it.
It traumatizes him kind of haunted by series. This is the book, I think, where Rand starts having his list of names.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Where he every night or every once in a while, he'll start listing these names of women who died because of him or for him or anywhere near him, basically, it turns out. But Moraine is always at the very top of the list.
Because he considers her the greatest loss.
Yeah, and she really is. And I'm crying over here.
So moving on, because I think we have spoken enough about that particular scene.
Okay. She does tell Rand that she knew that it was going to happen beforehand.
Right. And she'd kind of been hinting toward it. You know, I don't know if that means she kind of knew the situation or just knew it would happen. But there was a lot of foreshadowing that she was going to do something like that. I mean, a lot of foreshadowing. So this happens, and this scene is probably what most people remember the Fires of Heaven for. You know, whenever I think of the Fires of Heaven, that's the first thing that pops up in my head is, oh, that's where Moraine dies. It overshadows everything. Yes. Not saying there's not a whole bunch of other very important and great things that happen in the book, but that event overshadows everything. I mean, when you have a substantial character like that die, I mean, that's what is going to, you know.
Although something pretty important happens next, too. And why don't we go into that? Because Rand finally, in the afternoon, skims to Camelin with Matt Avienna and Asmodian and a group of Aiel. And Egwene was too injured from the assault by Lanfear. She had gotten injured in the fray. As soon as they land in Camelin, they're attacked by Ravine. And Avienda, Matt, and Asmodian die. I think it's described as he saw Matt's boots, and that's all he saw of Matt. Like, it was a brutal attack.
Because he was expecting them.
And yes. And so Rand chases Ravine into the world of dreams and ends up killing Ravine with Balefire, which, thank God, because I don't think I could have handled this. It set back enough time to where Avienda, Matt, and Asmodian had not died.
Right. And that really shows what's going on with this Balefire. Like, it really, because you get a piece of it in The Shadow Rising with the Dark Hounds, where there's the Dark Hound attack and then Rand Balefires them.
Yes.
And the Dark Hounds and anything that they affected are restored to normal or just gone because Balefire literally takes whatever it hits out of the weave, out of the pattern.
Yeah, it's saying that. Right,
and then so now it happens again, and Avienda, like I said, we had Avienda, Matt, and Asmodian die, but then he basically fights and Balefires the absolute crap out of Ravine, and then it brings them back because it reverses. Because it's interesting, and you see this throughout the series, you know, the effect that Balefire has depending on who's using it and how intense it is. You know, if you Balefire a little something, then it really only affects that item or that person, bless you. But then if you really, channel more power into that strike of Balefire, it doesn't just burn the person out of the pattern. It burns anything that they did out of the pattern, so much to the point that there's been some cases, they say, where something was burned out of the pattern so absolutely that barely anyone remembers it existed anymore.
Oh, yeah.
We
almost forgot something absolutely important. The reason that Rand was able to get Ravine with the Balefire is because Nynaeve was in Tel'Aran Riad. The word's right in front of me, but I can't read it. Nynaeve actually distracts Ravine because she happens to be there too.
Right. And she comes, I mean, she's the MVP at this point. You know, she comes in because this whole time while all this has been going on, you know, Nynaeve and Elaine have been dealing with Mogedion.
They have made it. Nynaeve and Elaine have finally made it to Saladar. They've been trying to find the rebel Aes Sedai for a while now. And while they're in Saladar, Nynaeve actually traps Mogedion in Tel Aran Riad. That's just a hard word.
Yeah, I just got used to hearing Michael Kramer and Kate Redding say it. Tel Aran Riad.
They say it so smoothly, and I cannot.
Well, when you read those words every day for a very long time when you're recording the books, I guess you kind of get used to it.
True, good point. But they end up catching her with an Adam.
Yeah. Poetic.
Yeah.
But needless to say, this is where Nynaeve is coming from whenever she's in Tel Aran Riad, and she, you know, she comes across or seeks out and finds, I'm trying to remember which one exactly, but she gets into the same area as Ravine and Rand. And so, yes, she comes in and distracts Ravine, and that allows Rand to balefire him, essentially. And he's, you know, he's pissed. He's not even considering any of Moraine's warnings or anyone else's warnings at this point. He's like, no, I will remove all traces of this man from the pattern.
This is also where... because it was Birgitta that took Nynaeve to spy on Mogedion, and Mogedion catches them, and Birgitta gets severely wounded and ends up appearing in the real world. Because
they pull her through to keep her alive, because if they had left her there, she would have died. And I think I'm trying to remember how Elaine bonded her.
Yes, and that's what kept her alive. Save her. Because she just appeared in the real world.
Right. She bonded her, and that's what saved her. So then she's you know, across with Elaine, you know, into the real world, and you know, that's
She was already in the real world whenever Elaine bonded her. What happens, I think that Mogedion is the one who forced Birgitta out of Tel Aran Riad. Because she brags about it at parts. But she comes up in the real world, and Nynaeve, basically, I forgot how they found her, but Birgitta appears in the real world. Elaine was awake this whole time, and, she doesn't know what to do. Birgitta's wounded, but her healing isn't working, and so the last ditch effort, Elaine bonds Birgitta to give her the benefits of the bond.
Right.
And it's what keeps her alive, because warders have, they're harder to kill, and they've got better stamina and all that stuff because of the bond.
So basically now, just for effect, I'll say this. Elaine has bonded a hero of the horn to herself. And what's so funny to me, and you see this in this book, so this isn't really a spoiler for future books, but it keeps coming up, is everyone sees her, but they don't know it's actually her. And the closest anyone gets to actually saying it's her, in the beginning, at least at first glance, is, you know, oh, you look awful lot like, they look at her braid, and they say, well, who do you think you are, Birgitta?
Yeah,
like who do you just kind of poking fun and like, oh, you're not and Birgitta. You even got a bow and arrow, too. Right? Yeah, it's like you get what's this? You get silver arrows. What are you, Birgitta? And like, well, I mean, it's just people just kind of mocking her, and she's like, she wants to be like, I kind of am Birgitta,
but she can't. She has to keep it a secret, of course.
She has to be secretive about it, and I think throughout the rest of the series, there's only a handful of people that really knew who she was. But in any case. So kind of getting to tying everything up here, you know, he kills Ravine, with the help of Nynaeve, who ended up there by all the circumstances we just covered. And really what ends up happening is I'm trying to figure out how to work into this, especially because I'm reading the last line here in the notes. After he kills Ravine with the Balefire, he comes back and finds that Avienda, Matt, and Asmodian are alive again because Ravine was burned out by the Balefire. But a short while later, Asmodian is killed for good. And we get the famous question. Who killed Asmodian? You know, and we don't really have enough time to, you know, speculate on that right now. We do believe there is an answer, albeit a vague one.
There is an answer that's confirmed, but
we can't say it here right now.
Yeah, that's a spoiler.
It is very much a spoiler. In any case, we do get a little bit of closure on that, but for the longest time, especially with the Wheel of Time fandom who's been following the books for years as they were coming out when Jordan was still alive, that was the question. Who killed Asmodian? You know, bumper stickers out now and Twitter accounts out now. I killed Asmodian, you know, like that's the whole thing. And it's because of this moment right here where Asmodian winds up dead and everyone's like, who did it? I don't know. Where'd they go? I don't know. Who killed this Forsaken? Was it another Forsaken? Was it somebody who just kind of like walked up and shanked him real quick and then disappeared with a pot and a fan? Like who was it? And for years people just speculated and you know, went through it all, and they could never, you know, I think some people were probably right in the long run, but it was just so much speculation around it that it just became a part of the fandom. So even though now we're pretty sure we know who killed him by the end of the series, you know, we still like to ask that question because there's still a little bit of doubt in some people's minds. And it's funny. We don't want to actually part with that. But Asmodian is killed. We don't know by who at this juncture. Yeah. But then Rand meets a very, very important character at this point toward the end of the book. He meets Davron Bashir.
I love Bashir.
Bashir is one of the five great captains in this world. He is a very accomplished military leader. He is the uncle of the queen of Saldea.
Queen Tenobia.
Queen Tenobia. She's very... Well, we don't talk about her. that's a whole other subject. But, you know, he's got a lot of titles. He's the Marshal General of Saldea, and he has actually been hunting a false dragon named Mazarum Tyheem. If you're listening to this and you already know this name, some of you are probably having one of two reactions. Either it's, oh, yay, Tyheem, yay, we're getting to that part of the series where he comes in, or it's revulsion. It's one of the two. I have found a lot of people who either love Mazarum Tyheem for the character that he is and becomes, you know, in whatever capacity, or people who just never could abide him, never could stand him. So, but he's not introduced in this book, but he comes up in this book because Bashir basically comes to Camelin to talk to Rand, and Rand is talking to him, and he's like, well, I know you've been chasing Mazarum Tyheem. Well, you know what? I'm going to grant amnesty to any male channelers because I need them. So I'm granting amnesty to Mazarum Tyheem.
It's not so much like it's partially need, but also I believe that Rand feels like it's wrong for him to be able to run the world and do as he pleases as a man who can channel without also granting that freedom to other men who can channel.
It definitely is both, but I think he really leans into the need because when he gives him justification for why he's, you know, why are you granting amnesty to all these other channelers, you know, these male channelers, his one of his main responses to that, it's a little more nuanced, but one of his main responses is, I need everyone I can get for the last battle.
Yeah. And
like, I need everyone.
He does have, oh, that's a spoiler. We can't talk about that.
Nope, we can't. So basically this is kind of where everything kind of wraps up is, you know, Rand is now moving. Basically, he was in Cairhien. Now he's moving into Camelin because he's basically taking Camelin
through this book. He started in Ruidian. He was in freaking Shan Chan for a little bit, and then he was in Cairhien, and now he is in Camelin.
A lot of movement, whole lot of movement. Not the most in one book, I think, but still a whole lot of movement. Now, distance-wise, yeah, because he fell through. They went through the gateway into Sean Chan. I don't even think they even knew that's where they were until they fought the Sean Chan and getting back through. But somehow or another, they got all the way to freaking Sean Chan. I thought that was so trippy. Because I'm reading it and it's like it's describing the people they come up on. I'm like, oh my God, he's in Sean Chan. How did they get to? They're in Sean Chan. Like, I started freaking out. I was like, how are they in Sean Chan? They're finna die. Nope, they're back. Yeah. So, but that's kind of where everything kind of ends in Camelin, with Rand kind of temporarily taking over Camelin. He's not, he's not this way in really in Kyrian either. He's stabilized Camelin. And like, he stabilized Kyrian. He's not the ruler there necessarily, like in actual official capacity, like he is in Tyr. Because because he took the Stone of Tyr, so he is the Lord of Tyr. But he's basically running the show until he can establish order and put somebody, you know, in charge, which, you know, this isn't really, he kind of says this in the book, in Fires of Heaven, so it's not necessarily a spoiler, but his goal is to put Elaine at least back on the Lion Throne of Camelin.
Because it belongs to her.
Right, so that's his plan, is to make sure she receives that rightful place.
Yeah, with Morghais supposedly dead, the throne is technically Elaine's.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at this point.
Right.
But that's a whole nother story.
But that's kind of Rand's plan for Camelin, is to put her on the throne, or to make sure she gets the throne, I should say. And that's his long-term plan, is he doesn't want to be the ruler of Camelin or Kyrian, really. He's there in both cities to maintain order, to make sure that everything is recovering from the different attacks and the control of the Forsaken in the form of Ravin for Camelin and all of that. He's stabilizing that. And the thing about it is it creates this really interesting dynamic in the books and in the different countries, because when he goes in, a lot of people do see him as an invader. It's like, you're not the rightful ruler, but you're sitting up there. But here's the thing though. I can't remember if he did this in Kyrian. I don't think he did this in Kyrian, but he never sat on the Iron Throne. Too much Game of Thrones. He never sat on the Lion Throne.
Yes, he kept it. He kind of put it on a pedestal and had a throne near it, which is kind of weird. Although I don't think that's until the next book.
Right, but I think he actually made a point in this book of saying that he wasn't going to set the Lion Throne because it was not his, which, and it would not be his.
The Lion Throne wouldn't fit him anyways, because the Lion Throne is meant for a woman, because Andor has queens.
Right. Of course, that wouldn't stop Ravin, but Ravin probably would have just destroyed the actual Lion Throne and created a new one.
Honestly, if Rand had tried to sit on the Lion Throne, he probably would have got a ton of pushback in Camelin.
Oh, absolutely. And he knew that. But he also, Rand is anything if not, you know, we're talking about earlier about how sometimes his honor gets him in trouble, i.e. Lanfear and Moraine. But now this is the good side of that, where it's, that's not mine. Just because I'm this very powerful salvific figure, messianic figure in this world, and I'm fulfilling all these prophecies, and people probably are going to and should in some respects bow to me, that's not mine. Yeah. I'm not taking it. I'm not going to sit on it. I need these people on my side. I need this queen on my side. And I love this queen. So she's going to sit on this throne. She's not the queen yet, but we all know we're talking about Elaine. So I'm not going to sit on this throne. I'm going to leave it alone. And the next person to sit on this throne should and will be Elaine. So,
yeah.
And that's kind of where everything kind of ends in this book. And we've covered, I guess, a lot of the high points here of Fires of Heaven. I know we probably skipped over a few things, but the biggest, most important things I know we have touched on. So we're just kind of winding our final episode down here. So, you know, before we sign off, you know, again, I just want to reiterate that, you know, I've really enjoyed my time here on this podcast. You guys will still be able to hear us over on our new one over at One Power Podcast. Like I said, be watching for that Twitter to come out by the time this is posted. It should be up. But if you still like listening to Thorn and myself, then we're still going to have our voices out there, just in a different platform, a slightly different format. But we would love to hear you guys, you know, feedback both on the Black Tower Podcast Twitter and on our upcoming, and as of this podcast, like I said, debuting Twitter. We'd love to hear your feedback. We'd love to, you know, hear from you guys. I encourage you guys to keep supporting the Black Tower. Those of you that are listening, you know, definitely support it. Keep listening. Just because, you know, we're coming off doesn't mean it's time to stop listening. In fact, you're getting one of the original guys back. So definitely come back and listen to the Black Tower. I will still be listening to it, and, you know, fully support Andrew. And if he ever comes back, Aaron, which I doubt he will, but, you know, Andrew and whoever takes up that co-host mantle with Andrew, you know, we support them. They're, you know, this is great work that they've done and they've built. And we wouldn't be here tonight recording, and we wouldn't be launching our own podcast if it wasn't for that. So we owe, you know, a debt of gratitude to the Black Tower Podcast. And Thorn, do you have any parting words for the podcast?
I think you've just about said it. You know me. I'm a few words.
Well, there you go. So, so anyway, guys, we have had a blast here.
Oh, we should mention, sorry, about the Q&A that we've canceled.
Yes, and I was actually working my way into that. So we had put up it's fine. We had put up a tweet asking you guys for questions to submit to, you know, so we could, the questions we can answer on a special episode where that's what we did. We answered questions. We only got a few. We didn't get very many. But
we got three.
Between that time and this time was when Thorn and I made the decision to leave the podcast and go do our own thing. So what we're going to do is we're going to save your questions. You are not unheard. We're going to save your questions, and we are going to answer them in due time on our podcast. So we're going to take those with us, and we are going to answer them.
Did we want to give a shout out to these people?
Absolutely. And who was it that we had asked the questions?
Okay. Chell Vannon, who is at Van and Chell, asked us a question. Right. I'm 6'1". At EthanMan30 asked us a question. And El Poco Loco Sobre Todo, which is at Poco Sobre, also asked us questions, and they're all very good questions. I'm kind of excited to get into them, but it's not nearly enough material to cover an entire podcast.
So trust us when we say we will take these with us to our new podcast, our new project, and we will answer those. Saved. You will not be. Yep, she's got them. She's got them saved, and we are going to answer those questions for you. So we hope that you enjoyed this episode, and I hope you will come over and listen to us as well as this podcast, Black Tower, and all other Wheel of Time podcasts. Truly, I'm just being honest with you, my podcast catchers are filled with almost nothing but Wheel of Time podcasts at this point. There's so many coming out, but they're all great. They're all so good. So many good perspectives on such a fantastic series that means so much to us. And we're just humbled that we were able to add our voice to the mix, and hopefully we'll be able to continue to do that on our new project. So please be watching and listening out for that. And of course, please continue your continued support. Said that continued too many times. Please continue your support for the Black Tower podcast. I know it will still mean a lot to Thorn and I, and it will mean the world to Andrew and Aaron if you continue to support the podcast. So please do so. You can follow this podcast at Tower Podcast. find them on Patreon, join the Discord. Make sure you hit up all the social media outlets. And I think if that's everything we've got covered, Thorn, then here it is. You know, this is Greg.
And this is Thorn.
And we're signing off.
Bye.